Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters, episode 1104. I'm Harry, joined today by special guest Lewis Brackpool. Say hello, Lewis.
Hello. Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm not too bad.
Is there anything you'd like to let the audience know about yourself?
Well, that I'm here, and thank you very much.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm glad to see that. I'd be worried if you weren't.
Very true.
Then I'd be doing this all by myself. Nobody would want to see that, would they? And today we're going to be talking about the cursed djinn knives, because all of knife crime is caused by the djinns that curse them, that force you to go out and stab people.
Right.
Thankfully not slash, though, so we've got some solutions for that. Bill Gates influencing UK policy. I'm interested to learn about that one. And finally, we're going to discuss whether Rishi Sunak is English. Now, it may sound like a very, very simple question, and it is, but some people are retarded, so I'm going to cover it anyway. And yeah, I think with that, before we start, just let people know where they can find you and what you get up to, Lewis.
Yeah, so obviously I'm an independent journalist. I've been doing this for several years now, 4 years. I usually post on Substack, X, Instagram, unfortunately. And yeah, I'm trying to be as sensible as I can be on X. So yeah, as well as I can.
I'm not.
I know. I know. We've shared the stage here a few times now. It's been good fun.
And every single time, career opportunities have closed themselves to you.
Narrowed.
off the podcast. Like, oh, God.
Another time.
Every time he's finished on the podcast with me, he is sweating buckets. Don't you worry, folks. But that's what I'm here for. I'm here to be honest, not polite.
And I respect that.
Thank you very much. And with that, let's get into the news. So everybody knows that knives in the UK are cursed. In Britain as it is, I don't know if it was a genie in a bottle that did it or if it was some kind of a voodoo ritual happened. The second anybody gets a hold of a knife in Britain, you get the irresistible urge to stab people. I know that when I'm preparing dinner at home, then I really have to hold myself back because who knows what could happen? It takes an incredible amount of self-restraint to avoid murdering people with a knife in the UK, according to the way that our leaders see it, at least, because that's how they're treating the new legislation that will be that is being put forward on how to restrict the sale of knives. Now, we've already heard some of this over the past few months since the Axel Ruta Cabana case and the conviction of him for murdering three young girls and assaulting a number of others with a knife. And they've said that they're going to be putting in new security checks for the sale of knives on online retailers, mainly Amazon, places like that, where you're going to have to do two ID checks now, just in time for Tony Blair's digital IDs to be coming in force later on this year. Before I get into the rest of it, though, and give you the rest of the news, first, reminder to everybody, who knows when the sale is going to stop? We're still selling merch. We keep being told it might be the last week, but it isn't. It's going on forever. It's like a Sports Direct sale. It will never end. Are we closing down? Maybe. Best Buy, just to be sure. Get yourself an Islander Metal t-shirt or an Islander Forestry Company t-shirt or one of Calvin Robinson not throwing a Roman salute. That's a rare shirt. I'm sorry. Calvin, I love you. You can also get a mug. You can get many things on the website. What else might be on there? I don't know. You best look yourself and buy something or else. Anyway, so the news...
That's a good radio voice almost, like...
Oh, I used to do radio. I used to do call centers, and they always thought that I was a recording message. Anyway, right. So there are new life laws coming in that will make a difference, according to some of the people who've been affected by knife crime. As you can see, this pair of British people who's been affected by knife crime. This is Ronan. Let me double check his name. Ronan Kanda, who was murdered back in 2023. Due to knife crime, because of him and a number of other incidents, including the Ruda Cabana murders, we are going to be getting these new knife laws. And what do they entail, perchance? So they say in this article here that we're getting stricter rules for retailers who are selling knives online, and they are going to be introduced in the spring, and we're going to be getting tougher penalties for those who break them. Retailers across the UK will be required to report any bulk or suspicious knife purchases to police, so restaurants are screwed. And the jail term for selling weapons to under 18s will increase from 6 months to 2 years. A new policing unit backed with £1 million, I think. Let me just double check it. Oh, they've updated the article since I was taking some of this information down, so some of the information has shifted. Yeah, we're getting a new policing unit with £1 million of funding to monitor for weapons being sold illegally on social media. They're getting created. So we know that always in the British state, that throwing money at the problem and creating new police units always works, right? Mm-hmm. That's worked consistently. It's being introduced as part of the government's crime and policing bill in the spring. The rules are in response to a review by the National Police Chiefs Council into the online sale of knives. The changes we will also see... Is it still in this... Okay, here we go. There we are. We'll get increased prison sentences for selling weapons to under 18, and that will apply to either individuals who have processed the sale or a company CEO. And what do you reckon that's in response to, eh? They're coming for Jeff Bezos,
yes,
guys. Literally, immediately after the Ruda Cabana conviction, one of the big things that they wanted to do to take it off of the fact that he was a foreign murderer, mm-hmm, who had racial motivations for the attacks that he committed. Remember, we had many quotes of him saying things from when he was in secondary school, like Britain needs some kind of genocide like Rwanda had, mm-hmm, which is fantastic, and then targeted a load of white children. That was brushed aside so we could pay attention to the much more important factor that he managed to buy a knife on Amazon.
Yeah.
Therefore, Jeff Bezos was to blame.
I mean, one of the most awful responses to all of that was the media, and it usually is.
We had two responses to it. We had the initial response where they blacked out all of the information, people went on the street and protested, and then were arrested for it. Mm-hmm. Many of whom are still in prison at the moment because they were advised by their lawyers not to try and take it to trial, instead just to take an immediate plea deal. Uh-huh. And then we had the immediate media response after the conviction of Ruda Cabana, both of which were very clearly coordinated. When you could go to any newspaper stand in the country, see all of these different newspapers, left wing, right wing, whatever you wanted to call them, right, had the same front page.
And I tried to put through a Freedom of Information request about that, and it was interesting, the response. I collaborated with Connor Tomlinson, your colleague, to try and figure out whether this was coordinated. And it's interesting how the Home Office actually pivoted to when you tried to figure out whether it was coordinated. But what I was going to say as well...
If it wasn't coordinated by the government, then it was coordinated by the editors.
Yeah.
Either way, it was clearly coordinated action.
Exactly. But seeing Amazon killer and this reframe of what was happening was just... It was
anything
unbelievably
the real problem, because the real problem, of course, as with many of the problems in this country, relates directly to government immigration policies. Mm-hmm. But Western liberal democratic governments in Europe, their only goal seems to be to pack in as many immigrants into every country like sardines. That is their one overriding goal. Oh, and also censor everybody who disagrees with them by introducing draconian laws and digital IDs and other kinds of
online safety acts
and censoring the internet. Those are their two main goals. Introduce foreign populations, tyrannize the natives. So, obviously, they have to pivot, because by pivoting to the Amazon thing, they can say, well, this gives us even more reason to censor the internet, mm-hmm. censor people's ability to buy, well, restrict people's ability to buy things that previously was just a normal household object. Let's not forget that back in the day, during the early days of England following the Norman conquest, I think in the mid-12th century, it was actually an act of law that an Englishman had a duty to carry a weapon on him at all times. There was an act of arms. I think maybe Henry II introduced this, that meant that if you were an adult male up to the age of about 40, you had to carry a weapon on you.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So that's what this country used to be, and now we are going further and further into restricting knives. Just
right.
Normal kitchen knives. Mm. Is ridiculous, but what else would you had you found from the Freedom of Information?
Oh, about to the Home Office. Yeah.
Did they just deny it?
They just denied. It was more of a pivot. The language was very vague. It was very typical of, you know, and as you know, I ping out so many, like, every single week.
It's worth doing.
Yeah, because even when you get a slither of information, it's extremely telling. And when they do say, oh, we hold this information, but we're gonna put an exemption.
It's easy to tell lies by omission as well.
Exactly, yeah. It's always worth doing. I encourage people to ping out these requests as well as much as you can.
Yeah, so some of the other things that we'll see in this law are that retailers are required to bring in stronger photo identity checks for buyers, both at the points of sale and delivery. A new offense of possession with violent intent, which will come with a prison sentence of up to 4 years. This means that even if the weapon is legal, if there is intent to cause violence, it will be a crime. Seems somewhat vague, but I'm assuming that they're going to say, if you're trying to go at somebody, or if you've got a knife on you and you look sketchy, will this include butter knives? Because let's not forget that somebody has been arrested in the past in this country.
For camping equipment.
Yeah, for camping equipment, yeah. And having a butter knife on him. Yeah, that's just how ridiculous this country is. The land of liberty and freedom, the birthplace of the Magna Carta.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not allowed to have butter knives on you if you look a bit too sketchy. It will also have a consultation on registration and licensing scheme for online knife sellers. So a whole load of new restrictions coming in for online retailers. Yvette Cooper had something to say about all of this. Did she mention anything to do with the actual reason that people are dying in record numbers in the UK for knife crime? No. It's horrifying how easy it is for young people to get hold of knives online. Even though children's lives are being lost and families and communities are left devastated as a result. Do you know what else is illegal for people to buy in Britain?
Pepper spray?
Well, that, yeah, but I mean, well, that's obviously just sensible, right? Because you wouldn't want young women to be able to defend themselves. No, guns. Do you know what you still get in London?
Guns.
Guns. Gun crime. Because
the criminals have the guns.
It turns out if you're a criminal, you won't go through legal means to buy weapons. You'll just buy them illegally. So as with everything that the state does in this country, it is criminalizing the behavior and actions of law-abiding citizens.
It's interesting. My old hometown of Crawley, there was a raid not too long, I think a few years ago, where police raided this guy's house and found an RPG in there. And it was kind of like,
I think they're not for commercial purchase, are they?
I've not
seen them at Asda.
No, or on Amazon. No. So, you know, it's, yeah, it's insane. It's absolutely insane.
Yeah. But Cooper added that not enough has been done to tackle the online market over recent years, which is why we made it an urgent priority. The new measures announced by the government will collectively be known as Ronan's Law after 16-year-old Ronan Kanda, who was murdered close to his Wolverhampton home 3 years ago. Ronan Kanda was killed in a case of mistaken identity by a fellow school pupil, Prabhjit Vidhasa. Right. Who was also 16 at the time. There was another child involved in it who was 18. Sorry, I suppose you'd be an adult at that point. Do you reckon he had an Anglo name? Celtic, perhaps?
I'm not going to speculate.
I've forgotten the name specifically, but it wasn't.
Right.
It was a name like Prabhjit, something like that.
Right, Right.
So there you go. But he used a 22-inch sword that he ordered online using his mother's ID to pass security checks. It was one of nearly 30 knives and machetes he had bought using the same method over several months. So there you go. I mean, he managed to bypass the security checks that were already in place. Mm. So might it be that people will still be able to bypass these security checks if they're just clever enough? Mm. Probably. The new recommendations also require social media companies to be more accountable for the thousands of knives that Commander Clayman says are being sold on platforms. They're being quite clever in the way that they don't overtly sell, but they show all the knives and encourage people to move to a different online platform to make the transaction. He says that police will be asking tech companies to remove selling content within 48 hours, which is still plenty of time for people to make their advertisements known. The measures are aimed at stopping sellers like Stefan Petrescu from Southampton. He used Instagram to sell hundreds of knives. Police found receipts which revealed that Petrescu had bulk bought more than $3,000's worth of knives which he then sold online. I'm noticing a distinct lack of Anglo names in all of these incidents, which suggests that the problem might not be that Englishmen have access to knives. If you ask me, again, we used to have a duty in this country to basically carry a sword on your hip at all times, and these were much more peaceful times, despite all of the interwarring factions in the monarchy, which were basically just small skirmishes back then compared to the kind of wars that we face today. Certainly compared to the war zone that is parts of London.
I just think it's insane about... Do you say he was selling knives on Instagram?
Let's see if we can find some photos, because they included some down here.
Oh.
Yeah, here we go. Two ninja swords. There was also some pictures they had of him with his face out, but you could see he was very clearly, I mean, Petrescu, he was not an Englishman. He would just go on Instagram, post this kind of thing on his Instagram story, and presumably people would know the website to go to or know his contact details so that they could get hold of these things.
Insane.
So again, a lot of this seems to be foreign criminals coming here and saturating the market, mostly going to be bought by other foreigners in the country so that they can go and commit crimes with them. For this, the law-abiding Englishman must suffer.
One of the most insulting things as well that I've heard is the argument for more the youth centres. And that...
We've got some of that in a moment. Yeah, yeah. Okay. The idea that if you just put more activities...
You put ping pong in a room, then suddenly knife crime...
The drill gangs will just evaporate overnight, right? Because, I mean, it's a postcode war. So if we put the ping pong hall between the postcodes, they might join together. This is like... you just reminded me. Did you ever watch the episode of South Park where Jimmy and Timmy try to fix the Bloods versus the Crips rivalry?
I think I do.
Yeah, and they just invite them all to a local community center and they all eat chicken and play basketball together, and that solves all of the crime, and the Crips and the Bloods make amends with one another. Oh, wait, I think by the end of that episode they still end up shooting all of each other. But that's what Idris Elba thinks may work. Idris Elba, who has done a recent documentary called Idris Elba, Our Knife Crime Crisis, which saw him spend 12 months exploring the reality of the UK's stabbing epidemic. Elba claimed that around 25% of stabbings are perpetrated using knives commonly found at home, and areas of innovation could help reduce this. He said that not all kitchen knives need to have a point on them. That sounds crazy to say, but you can still cut your food without the point on your knife, which is an innovative way to look at it. So you're not allowed points on the end of your knives now, according to Idris Elba in his ideal world, because otherwise young children of particular backgrounds may stab each other with it. But if you take the points off, they're not going to figure out how to slash. If anything, it'll just make being murdered by someone with a knife more painful, because they're just going to have to hack you to death instead of stab you.
I'm almost lost for words at all of this. It's just, it just
ridiculous.
Seems like, yeah,
we live in an enormous circus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To say lightly.
That's clown world for you.
Indeed.
In the BBC film, because of course it was BBC, Elba said that young people in London gangs are not big and scary. No, that's why they carry knives. I've met these people in these London gangs. They're about this big and weigh as much as my pinky finger. And he added that it is sad. Sad, so sad, that society turned our back on them. It's society's fault. Where are the youth clubs? If we had the youth clubs, these kids wouldn't be stabbing each other. And it goes on to add that there were more than 50,000 1,000 serious knife crime offences recorded in England in the year ending June 2024. London has the highest rate of serious knife crimes. And if you want to wonder, well, okay, maybe if you take the points off of knives, will that work? Some companies have already been doing that. Since 2020, Viners decided that they were going to sell knives with no tips in response to rising knife crimes. This is what modernity in Great Britain, in the UK, bruv, has reduced us to. You can't, some are just going to stop putting the points on the knives. Again, you can't cut someone to death with that, right? They're going to go for you. They're going to, and it's just going to bounce off you. And nothing will happen, and they'll just go, oh, I guess, it makes never it, mind then, keep your money.
It makes it even more insulting just hearing about the people going camping and being arrested for cutlery stories. You just hear that, like, you know, people getting arrested in the countryside just for getting away from the cities and still encountering a police search for simply cooking a full English breakfast in the middle of nowhere and still being searched and almost detained for it and arrested. It's just, I don't know. It's one of these subjects, right? It's so tiresome. It's so and it's anger inducing, but it's also just really, really tiresome because the amount of videos, the amount of stories, news articles, everything of so many people, kids mainly, killing each other. Especially in London, Birmingham, Manchester, all of these big cities. And I know people such as Adam Brooks, who does really good work on trying to do charity work and, of course, encourage people to put the knives down, quote unquote, and attempts to actually try and, you know, do something about it, where, as you just hear all this, society's turned our backs, blah blah. It's like, well,
you get blamed for it. And society gets blamed for it. God forbid we blame the murderers.
Yeah, God
forbid.
For
what they're doing. Yeah. God forbid we actually police hotspot areas where this kind of thing happens, because a lot of it comes down to, in London, for instance, a lot of the drill gangs.
Yes.
In Brixton and other parts of London, I've mentioned this ad nauseum, but it bears repeating. The drill gangs engage in postcode wars with one another. Mm-hmm. They murder one another, often with knives, and then people throw their hands up and go, well, it's not like we can arrest them all, when we know that they rap about the kinds of crimes that they commit, and there is an interactive map that they post themselves, showing the gang territory. Yeah. I found it. It was very easy to find. I just Googled gang territory. It's one of the first things that comes up. So if the police wanted to, they could go, okay, well, this gang's here, this gang's here, this gang's here, this gang's here. We'll just make sure to increase our presence there.
Yeah.
But sociologists and people that the government listens to would cry about it being over-policed.
Right.
And then say that that's the reason for crime, right? Because I know that if police show up in my neighborhood more often, I'm more likely to commit crime because I just can't resist.
There's two things as well to add. About drill, I read about Amnesty International campaigning against courts who use drill lyrics and drill music as evidence, as confessions or evidence. And Amnesty International is rallying against that, saying it's a free speech issue. And I'm kind of like, if you're inciting, like, surely that's...
It's not even inciting. Sometimes it's not even just confession. Yeah. Here's literally who I killed the other week.
Yeah, or plan to, you know? And I sit there and I go, I just sort of... My head just sort of spins and I just don't even know if I can articulate how annoyed I just get at seeing that. I had something about the amnesty that I wanted to get out then, but the other thing... It's completely gone, but if it comes back...
That's fair. Of course, in all of this, what I'm talking about, because I have to mention it because it's the obvious factor, is that a lot of these crimes are being committed by and against foreigners in this land. And you try and look up the information in the ONS, but the ONS say that they get their information from the Home Office. The Home Office specifically do not hold police recorded crime figures and overall offences, including a knife, by ethnic group. So they don't collect that information. But there are other ways of finding this, including the London Assembly back in 2022 did a report on this because they wanted to find ways to stop the knife crime epidemic in London. And as part of that, they looked at which groups are committing these crimes and who are they committing them against. Well, they even did in this is a Mayor of London, London Assembly official article, calls for commission on knife crime in the black community. This is how it starts. This is not 4chan writing this. This is an official report. Despite making up only 13% of London's total population, black Londoners account for 45% of London's knife murder victims, 61% of the knife murder perpetrators, and 53% of knife crime perpetrators. So this sounds a lot like it is a, for the most part, over half of that is being committed by particular groups against that same group.
Well, this is, did you say Mayor of London? So this is a Sadiq Khan appropriated report.
Done back in 2022.
Yeah.
But for this kind of crime that's being committed by foreign populations, you and I and other law-abiding people in this country have to be punished in ways that probably will not affect these rates. Because again, these people are criminals, the ones committing these crimes. Mm-hmm. Criminals are able to get around checks because they involve themselves in crime, shockingly enough. Mm-hmm. One of the other things that I found that was interesting was this YouGov poll that was done 2 years ago talking about white and ethnic minority views and experiences of crime. And if I scroll down here, you can see the fear or knowing of people who have been a victim of knife crime. You can see that ethnic minority Britons say that they 19% of them know somebody who's personally been the victim of knife crime, whereas white Britons it's 12%. So that's a difference right there. So they're more likely to suffer from this kind of crime. But then if you go down as well and look at the attitudes that they have, what measures do these people think would be effective at tackling knife crime? So for me, the big one would be put them in prison and police the areas where this is going to happen. Yep. And you would expect that given they're more likely to be affected by these crimes, that they would be in support of that. No, white Britons are far, far more in favor of long sentences for people committing these crimes. They're also far, far more in favor of things like police having stop and search powers. Mm-hmm. So this seems to come down to me as a preference, which is that, yeah, they know that they're being victimized by these crimes, but they still wouldn't like to have the kind of policies that have been shown to actually work, which is criminalize murder, criminalize, put these people in prison. I know it sounds like a daring idea, but if we make murder illegal and then enforce that law, it might actually have an effect. What they say, what they would prefer, is youth centers and educational programs, of course.
I think as well, it's worth pointing out, Theresa May decommissioned the idea of stop and search as well during her tenure.
Another Tory victory, thank you.
Yeah, and that led to an explosion of knife crime, or like an epidemic of knife crime, which has since spiraled completely out of control. And I mean, if you see statistics like that, post repealing a measure that a lot of people decried as horrific.
Yeah.
And then you look at the statistics after and you see a completely different result.
And again, it's all symbolic purely for the purposes of making sure our elite classes don't feel racist.
Well, it's liberalism. It's liberal tyranny.
Yeah, and there's also, I remember a few months ago in my hometown, they had this horrible, horrible knife angel monument, which is part of some nationwide campaign where they have this big angel model that's made up of knives that have been handed in, and they take it around the country and have it in the town centers of these places so that it will encourage criminals to hand in their knives. Ridiculous! If you believe that that's going to work, you live in an absolute fantasy land, or you're an idiot, or both. It's so symbolic.
Never purely heard of that before. That's
purely for the sake of not actually doing anything effective. Interestingly, when you mention when this all went to a spite, I was sent this by one of our back end guys, Cameron. So thank you very much for that. And you can see here a graph charting the explosion of knife crimes or possession of knife offences in England and Wales from 1995 to 2025. I think this was 2024 probably. This was a very recent report that came out. And you can see after about 2006, 2007, it explodes. So that's about when the Blair wave, you could say, Blair, but also I was talking more about the sort of immigration that came in 97. Yeah, and then you can also see what that'd be about 2017 around Theresa May as well. Mm-hmm. It spikes there again
That's what I was thinking.
It's so stark how, again, these policies have a genuine effect on the world. And not actually doing anything about the crimes, not having the information or not being prepared to face the information showing who is committing these crimes and who they're committing them against only makes us all poorer and only means that the government gives themselves more of a pat on the back and more excuse to tyrannize actual law-abiding citizens in this country. Mm-hmm. That's what I have to say about that. This won't work, basically. This won't work and people won't stop getting stabbed because the government doesn't want that.
And it's sad, really. And like I told you, I don't even... The topic of that is just... It's extremely tiring. It's not only tiring, it's distressing. And you just... When you look at that graph and see how it just continues and continues, and then you see drops of where a policy would be introduced and you start to see results and then it gets repealed and then it goes back up. And you start to pull your hair out and you go, well, how is this going to be sorted? Well,
it becomes reactive. And you can say that, most criminal legislation is going to be reactive because you need somebody to have committed a crime. Obviously, we don't want Minority Report. But if we have data showing that crimes are being committed in these areas by particular populations against particular populations, then we can at least have some kind of preventative measures in place if we know that these are going to be criminal hotspots. Again, just as something as simple as going, hold up, these gangs have a map.
Yeah, yeah.
These gangs
have an interactive
map that show you where they operate. Why don't we go and arrest some people? It's like the whole MS-13 thing in El Salvador, where you'd have the liberal chattering classes talking about how do you know that he's a rapist and murderer? All because he's got "I'm a rapist and murderer" tattooed on his forehead. Well, yeah, that kind of gives it away a little bit. Mm. That gives it away a little bit.
Mm. Yeah. Bill Gates. One of the most criticized, for good reasons, in my view, this is just my view, on the internet. As you know, but obviously I'm sure some of your audience might not know, I enjoy sending off and annoying government departments with requests to information, known as the Freedom of Information Act or the Freedom of Information Request, where you can send an email to a government department and request some information, because we are, by law, allowed to be told information if you ask for it, because it's kept on record. However, they're a bit sneaky and they like to add exemptions or to prevent people from seeing certain information. Now, if you cast your mind back to late last year in 2024, just before the budget was announced in 2024, Bill Gates went and met Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves and the Labour government just before this was announced. And then
just before the budget was announced that was explicitly trying to destroy British farming.
Bingo.
And Bill Gates is one of the largest farm owners in America, right?
Bingo.
Interesting.
Very interesting. So when a picture emerged online of Bill Gates standing with standing with Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves, obviously a lot of people online, rightly so, started pointing and saying, hang on a minute, you're now attacking farmers or the agricultural sector. You have a lot of foothold within this section in the United States. You've even done things over in Edinburgh where you've given cows genetically modified whatever. He's very into the vaccines.
Something that's also being done at the moment to try to prevent cows from releasing as much methane.
Yes.
And also it always is worth repeating, the inheritance tax changes for the farmers is predicted to raise, what was it, about £520 million per year, I think was the projections. That's about a day's worth of NHS funding, and also is completely negated by the foreign aid that we send to foreign farmers across the world.
Yes, very true.
So it's just to destroy the agricultural sector. Mm.
So this meeting between Keir Starmer and Bill Gates, I thought I'd send off a request to ask for some details. So I've put here, submitted an FOI request to Keir Starmer's cabinet seeking details on any meetings or correspondence involving Bill Gates during his October 2024 visit, specifically regarding agriculture and farming. As the largest private farmland owner in the US, Gates' visit just before the UK budget announcement and amidst a sudden crackdown on farmers has raised eyebrows on social media. It's crucial to address and clarify any potential links because it was a massive, massive thing at the time. There is my email, which you can have a little look. Pause the video if you like and just read that. Then you have to wait 20 working days for a response. And when that happened...
So they can figure out how they're going to sneak
around. How they're going to sneak around it, essentially. I got a response. This was in December, the 20th, so just before Christmas. They cited Section 35 of the FOI Act, which protects the government policy-making process.
That's my favourite part about democracy, where you as a citizen don't have to be told anything about how the government comes up with its decisions.
That's exactly. So they basically turned around and said, we have to conduct a test just to make sure that if we release this information, it could affect public policy or could affect the process of making this public
policy. Piss people off.
Yeah, massively. Yeah. Meaning, they've inadvertently said in the first email back, disclosing what Bill Gates was talking about with Keir Starmer
is related to public policy somehow.
And the process of it. So I waited another 20 working days and received another delay.
Okay.
So I was informed that obviously they invoked Section 35, but in response, obviously I sent a follow-up emphasizing why this is a crucial public interest issue because they planned on conducting a test. And I said, you know, the public deserves transparency and you have to frame it like that. But they said, we need some extra time for this one. Because we're still considering this as a public interest.
I hope to let you have a response by the 20th of February. So that's tomorrow.
That is tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I still haven't received anything as of yet.
Wait until your next 20 working day delay. That's what I'm expecting you'll get tomorrow.
Yes.
If you get anything else, because if they just keep invoking that part of the act, then they can push it back forever and nobody gets any information. Yeah. Although, of course, what we can do is we can infer what they're hiding from us.
Exactly. And you can do a thing called an internal review. So when you send off a request, and they always put it in the black and white at the bottom, if you're unhappy with this request, please send a complaint or whatever. And usually it just goes to some random bloke's desk and they have a look and go, oh. But if you go through a particular channel, you can request it goes through it like almost like a court system, and they can review it and they can make sure that actually, yes, we are following guidelines and we're not, or we can show you this part of information or we can't. What I find interesting is that many people, especially on the left of politics, were complaining a lot about Elon Musk and his involvement with Reform UK, whether you like them or not, doesn't matter for this argument. And I remember someone like Stadlen had said, whatever our politics, surely we can all agree that British democracy should not be for sale to foreign billionaires. And then I rightly, I believe, pointed out, well, where were you about Soros, Bill Gates, Larry Fink, Klaus Schwab, Rockefeller Foundation, Xi Jinping? Nothing. Silence. And I seem to see this a lot.
It all depends. Well, I mean, those guys, yeah, they're interfering, but they're interfering for the interests of what Matt Stadlen likes.
Yes, yes, and everything else. But then I wanted to ask, why is it that so many people online and in communities across, I would like to think, the political spectrum, but it's mostly on, like, on the right, usually, that are very, very critical of Bill Gates. Some on the left, might I say, but
those would have
a lot.
To be properly principled leftists. They still exist.
They still exist somewhere, indeed. But why is it that people are very skeptical of Bill Gates? And why is it that Bill Gates is so hated? Well, first of all, people don't like the idea of a foreigner coming over and then interfering with policy making for a start, especially Britain is almost like a vassal state of America at this point.
Oh, it is.
And seeing Bill Gates come over with knowing that he has invested in 250,000 acres of farms and has pushed out small farming businesses within the United States, people are saying, yeah, we don't want that happening over here. So that's very annoying. But if you roll the clock back, there's other things. He's made lots of, obviously, investment in, quote, public health. And there was a particular thing in this article that I wanted to go through somewhere down here. So he works on following areas such as discovery and translational sciences, enteric and diarrheal diseases. Didn't know that. HIV, malaria, neglected tropical diseases, pneumonia, tuberculosis, all of these.
But basically trying to fix Africa.
Pretty much. Yeah. And he's also into genetically modified crops. Mm. But his preaching of climate change, he also invests in fossil fuels at the same time. And you find this with people like John Kerry, who would say, I'm all for the climate, but then go around in private jets, you know, the classic argument.
Well, it's the same argument that's made against regulatory capture, against regulations that should be trying to regulate monopolies.
Sure.
For instance, if you make sure that you are on the board of the regulators or you have people on the inside, then you can control your competition. Mm-hmm. Because the regulations go against them, you can cover the costs. Same with this, you can cover the costs of all of the extra taxes and barriers that get put in the way of fossil fuels. It just means that you've got no competition because they can't do it.
Exactly. So people, rightly so, and even I think I read The Guardian, even though, and we will get to this in a bit about him and The Guardian, his involvement with them, they even said, well, hang on a minute, you're investing in fossil fuels, but whilst preaching about the climate. Very, very strange. Speaking of that, he's obviously invested as well, if you can see, into the BBC.
Oh, would this be for the BBC? Was it the World the World Journalism? Because I can see this was the US aid, where they got about $2.5 million or pounds. Sorry, where was the Bill Gates involved in it? Oh, yeah, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Our significant donors include UK Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Office, several UN agencies, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Swedish International Development Cooperation Agency, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, this is for BBC Media Action and BBC World Services, which seems to be a funnel for money to be sent to independent journalists across the world. But the fact of the matter is, as with everything else being funded by USAID in the journalistic sphere, if you are being funded by a foreign government, mm-hmm. and the BBC is a government organ, then you're not independent anymore.
I agree you are
funded by foreign interests.
Yeah, indeed. Same with The Guardian. This is on his website, gatesfoundation.org. To support The Guardian and produce regular reporting on global health and development topics in its global development section. And I believe the amount there is nearly $3.5 million.
Yep.
It's quite substantial. And that was for 36 months in September 2020. Very interesting. Yeah. Very, very interesting. He has done some very strange things, however. I think, do you remember the time...
I don't think I've heard of this.
No?
He drank shit water.
Yes. This was 10 years ago, might I add. Or, well, it says 20... Yeah, 10 years ago, it's 2015. Of course it is.
10 years
That's
ago.
That's very weird.
I know, I don't want to think that it was 10
years
ago.
Yeah, it's very strange.
COVID was 5 years ago almost. Yeah, it's disturbing.
So if we could play the clip, it's towards sort of halfway.
I mean, it's only a 30
seconds. It's only 30 seconds, so we can watch that.
Bill Gates showing the highest level of confidence in a new technology that turns waste, human waste, into drinking water. I am not kidding about this. He tweeted, "From your toilet to my glass, I got to taste water made from human waste." Yeah, it's worse than you think. Check out the highlights from the attached video.
The Omni processor turns sewer sludge, which is kind of nasty, into clean drinking water, electricity, and ash.
It's water.
Yeah, I think that was about 10 feet away from the human waste and sludge.
Would you drink
right
it?
Right into the glass.
Would you drink it?
Yeah,
would
no,
you drink
no.
sludge?
No.
No?
No, I don't like this constant humiliation that we're supposed to go through to turn into bug men. I don't want to... Mm-hmm. I will not drink the shit water. I will not eat the bugs. I will not live in the pod. You can't make me.
Obviously, it's important to add... There is a lot that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has funded in very wacky projects. So I'm only condensing it. So, you know, because we'd be here for several hours to go through everything that Bill Gates done. It's only good to go through the highlights. But this one is a very, very interesting one. And it's caused a lot of controversy. And it's another subject that I am fascinated by and enjoy. I say enjoy. I don't enjoy it. It shouldn't be a thing.
Funding solar geoengineering research. Is he going to do the Mr. Burns? Is he going to put up a big sun visor to block the sun out?
Shall we roll the clip?
Oh, God, go on.
Basically affects the whole planet with one project. So that is not necessarily a situation that has a lot of profit opportunity, right? Because there's not going to be a lot of different people that can do it and compete in a marketplace.
Bill Gates is among a dozen individual donors and 14 foundations backing the first stratospheric solar geoengineering experiment out of Harvard. It's called Stratospheric Controlled Perturbation Experiment, or SCOPEX. A high-altitude balloon will lift instruments about 20 kilometers into the stratosphere, where it will release less than 2 kilograms of different naturally occurring chemicals, like calcium carbonate and sulfates, and then measure the change in atmospheric chemistry and light scattering. The Harvard group that runs SCOPEX and other experiments has raised more than $16 million, more than double any other solar geoengineering effort. And annual global funding has gone up from $1 million in 2008 to $8 million in 2018, with the majority of that funding coming from the U.S. The first phase of SCOPEX will cost around $3 million, with much more needed for wider research on solar geoengineering. To this point, stratosphere injections have only been tested with climate modeling. In the UK, a government-funded solar radiation management test called SPICE was cancelled in 2012 because of issues with patents.
Yes, funding solar geoengineering projects as well. There is another part in that video to which I didn't get the timestamp for, so I do apologize. But it's a very famous clip that a lot of people have posted as well, where he talks about sun dimming, and it's the idea of is flying aircraft up into the air and dropping particular chemicals to block out the sun.
Well, that's just interesting, isn't it?
Indeed.
I thought chemtrails and stuff like that were supposed to be
I thought it was a conspiracy theory, yeah. Interesting. Thoughts so far?
My main thought is that somebody like Bill Gates has never done anything to be able to earn the kind of respect or power that he holds. A man like Bill Gates has made a lot of money through technology, yes, but that doesn't mean that he should have such control over people. He has neither the mandate of the people or the mandate of heaven. And frankly, he just seems a bit evil. I think one of the reasons that people dislike him, let me just go back to this one. One of the reasons that people don't trust him very much is he just looks weird.
look
at that. He looks creepy. He looks like what you would expect a lizard person to look like, right? And so when you hear that this guy is, what's this guy do? Does he, like, I don't know, follow people in parks at night or something? No, he's planning to block out the sun. Oh, okay, so he can spend more time in the dark following people in parks. Okay, all right, no, Not that I think that he does that, just he looks like somebody who would do that.
Right. Indeed. There's a lot of controversy, indeed, in terms of projects. It's very interesting as well. You mentioned about all things bugs or bug related. Well, he is, of course, contributed to that too, despite it being told that it was a kind of conspiracy theory here. I don't know who these guys are. I was reading this article this morning. I thought it was very funnily worded, calling the Bill Gates bug eating conspiracy, and tried to explain it. That's obviously vile.
Well, I mean, if it is a concentrated effort by people with a lot of money to make sure that we can engineer food that is made out of bugs that people will be basically forced to eat, that is a conspiracy. That is a conspiracy. It's just one that's true.
Yeah. Well, you should listen to how this is worded. The history of bug eating. The culinary tradition of eating insects is not new. Ah, okay. Humans have eaten bugs for millennia, tracing back to prehistoric times when insects were a common part of diets worldwide. So we should just return to that.
Return to monkey.
Return to prehistoric foods.
Return to monkey. Okay, you're starting to get me on board now.
Early humans foraged for bugs, and some indigenous cultures consumed them as a protein source. Ancient Greeks and Romans savored locusts, whilst Asia, edible insects became delicacies, where they remain so today. Colonization. Indeed, and industrialization led to a decline in bug consumption in some societies.
Branding it taboo and culturally gross, because it is
gross. Because it is gross.
Because it's disgusting. Just splice in the footage of Carl Pilkington at the China market watching people eat bugs while he's chowing down on his Monster Munch. That's me. I've got my pack of Monster Munch. I don't want any of the bugs. Keep that to yourself, buddy.
But despite it being a conspiracy theory, yes, he has done it as far back as May 2012 and so on and so forth.
All things bugs, LLC, including you. You're the bug. It's Bill Gates, at least.
Indeed. And that's on the gatesfoundation.org. The other one as well, and this is the spicy one, so I don't want to get in trouble for talking about this one, but his, association with none other than Jeffrey Epstein, and was asked about this as well. There was a video of him being questioned on this by a mainstream reporter. So, of course, we could, look at that as well, which is here, and see what he has to say about that.
Want to play this, Samson? Thank you.
It was reported at that time that you had a number of meetings with Jeffrey Epstein, who, when you met him 10 years ago, he was convicted of soliciting prostitution from minors. What did you know about him when you were meeting with him, as you've said yourself, in the hopes of raising money?
I had dinners with him. I regret doing that. He had relationships with people he said, would give to global health, which is a interest I have. Not nearly enough philanthropy goes in that direction. Those meetings were a mistake. They didn't result in what he purported, and I cut them off. That goes back a long time ago now. So there's nothing new on that.
It was reported that you continue to meet with him over several years, and that, in other words, a number of meetings. What did you do when you found out about his background?
Well, I've said I regretted having those dinners, and there's nothing, absolutely nothing new on that.
Is there a lesson for you, for anyone else looking at this?
Well, he's dead. So, in general, you always have to be careful. I'm very proud of what we've done in philanthropy, very proud of the work of the foundation. That's what I get up every day and focus on.
Mm. Nice and evasive.
Mm. Body language.
Very shifty.
Wasn't great. But there are a list of reasons to why people are very much skeptical of Bill Gates and criticize him a lot online. And this Freedom of Information request being delayed so far down the line, and we will find out tomorrow, the 20th of February, whether or not it's delayed again, whether I actually will find or have, well, we can find some information that we can talk about on what they discussed during their meeting, and or are they going to kick the can down the road again and delay it again and again and again until I'm there pulling my hair out trying to figure out a way to get around it?
My predictions are not sunny.
They're not. No. Neither.
All right, then. Shall we move on to the last segment, fellows? So let's ask a question. Can anybody in the world, under any circumstance you think of, be English?
No.
Correct. That's where I would like to stop this segment. But sadly, discourse being what it is, people are very, very stupid and people are very, very dishonest. And so we have to talk about this because it is a little bit of discourse that's been going on. I did talk about this in a daily video that I put that we put up on the daily channel yesterday that you should watch. I thought that was a good little video. But I thought I'd talk about it a little bit more today with Lewis. I thought it'd be very interesting. But first, we've got the merch store. Buy the things on the merch store. Buy the shirts, buy the posters, buy the mugs, and they will make you a very cool person. Women will look at you differently. Men will respect you more. These are not guarantees. This is not a sales guarantee.
Small print.
But my opinion, I think you'd look cool in it. So there you go. Buy the stuff. So this has all been started by these kinds of accounts from people who are, I mean, foreign. I mean, this is Bushra Shaikh. I think that's her name. I don't know if that's pronounced it right. She's obviously of foreign background, and she has decided to poke the bear by saying that today I've decided to return to calling myself English because I am born in England makes me English.
What made her stop?
Possibly because she's not English. If you have some kind of different ethnic identity that you can identify with because of the fact that you're not ethnically English, that probably means that you're not English. Okay, because to me, English is much more narrow and defined than something like British, which is a civic nationality for the peoples of England, Wales, and Scotland.
The Union.
Yes, it's the Union, right? And as part of the British Empire, we did welcome a lot of people who were in the colonies into that kind of civic identity. Yeah, the Commonwealth, etc. But English as an identity is tied directly to your ancestry, and it's defined by being descended from the Anglo-Saxons and the Celts, because there was a lot of admixture there, because the Celts, the Britons who were originally here in the first place. If you have no Anglo-Saxon ancestry, if you are not Celtic, if you are not Anglo-Saxon, if you are not Germanic, then you're not English. It's a very specific and defined thing, and it should just stop there. But these people like to do this, one, as an act of cultural and ethnic erasure, as far as I'm concerned, and also because of the fact that it is encouraged by the power structures that we live under, because they want multicultural, multi-ethnic England to be something that everybody can buy into. And so they're encouraged to renounce our history, ignore our history, downplay our history, hand it over to foreign peoples and say, you did this, and not these people who've been here for over 1,000 years. And again, when it comes to the English ethnicity, we've been calling ourselves English for over 1,000 years. We're one of the oldest recognized ethnicities in the entire world. It's quite interesting. It's interesting to read the history, but it's an act of demoralization. So these people know that they can take advantage of it to piss people off and to tactically adopt this kind of civic nationalism. And it goes around quite a lot. Like this person, Sangeeta Misra, you may recognize, sadly, from LBC. She's one of those race grifters on LBC. Well, I'm jealous. I'm very, very jealous. Where she said, this brown Hindu, East African Indian British Londoner is also English. Get over it. So if you can say that you are all of these things, all of these very, very different and disparate things, all at the same time, you're nothing at all. You're nothing at all. Something eventually becomes so inclusive that it goes back around to being completely meaningless. If everybody can be something, then it doesn't exist, because nobody is that thing if it's not specifically defined. And again, this is just one of those rage bait engagement sort of tactics, because they know they can get away with it.
I don't pay attention to the slop Well, I try and the slop from, you know, a lot of accounts that I've watched this debate just emerge. I think we'll be getting onto it, of course, but it was
Fraser Nelson
and Constantine Kissin
getting into a bit of an argument about
a bit of a tiff about it.
And I've had my differences with Constantine in the past, but I will say he was on the right side of this argument.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
Clearly, and you know, fair play to him for that. I'd also put a qualifier here of if you have to demand that people recognize that you're English because they don't recognize you as English immediately, probably not English.
Right.
I mean, that's that. I mean, that's just a telltale sign.
It's interesting because my mother's ancestry,
oh yes,
stems all the way back. The surname on her side stems all the way back to the Domesday Book that's in the British Museum.
Yes,
with the Normans, and you know, I think everyone had to.
There was the enormous census that William the Conqueror conducted, which took in basically all of the land that he had conquered.
Yes,
up to that point,
yeah. And everyone had to sign a declaration saying that we own this sort of land, and finding out that your ancestry stems all the way back to there is quite compelling.
It makes you feel very... It helps you to recognize the history that you have in your bones, because you stem back, you're rooted all the way back to then. You have ancestry going all the way back to then. These people, I mean, a lot of them have just... Like, they're very, very recent ancestors, one or two generations ago, have just got off the boat. Now they're saying that they've been here as long as us. They built this place. It's very insulting, and it's purposefully demoralizing for a lot of people. And also, again, just maybe this is just me, but I'm a stickler for these kinds of definitional arguments. And so it really annoys me that when people try and turn English into a civic mm-hmm. identity, when again, if you want to make the argument British because of the
very
empire,
different.
That's a different one. English is very, very specific. Simply because you were born in England doesn't make you English. It can make you a British citizen, doesn't make you English.
Yes.
Same as me being born in India, I could maybe get Indian citizenship. I don't know what their citizenship laws are like over there.
Or Japanese.
It doesn't make me Indian, doesn't make Jared Taylor Japanese, doesn't make Rudyard Kipling Indian just because that they were born there. And this goes hand in hand with the other kind of culture that we're fed these days, as has been found on the UK aesthetics, which is the new British UK citizen that they hope that we will all become if we all dispense with our identities, dispense with our rooted histories, dispense with our culture that has developed over 1,000 years. We can all become this.
Listen. All right. So at Nando's last night, walked straight in like, man needs no menu. Just about to order when Jonesy says, do you do nuggets? Literally the whole restaurant starts creasing and Layla says, are you not embarrassed? Then boom, this guy bolts through screaming, man needs water. Gave his girl the serious ick. Big Dan's like, red flag right there. She's like, orange flag more like, brother only ordered a medium.
I think that's enough of that.
Yeah.
It's
nothing really to say about any of that.
It's a good feeling when you watch something like this, isn't it?
I don't really understand.
Again, you're not supposed to understand. You're supposed to watch it and recognize that the country around you, this is not England that we're being presented here. This is London culture
right here.
Right. Yeah, this is speaking in the, what is it? They call it modern London English, which is kind of a bastardization of the
Mockney.
English. It's not even Mockney, because it's also mixed with Jamaican slang and Creole and all of these different things. And you're supposed to look at it and recognize that, okay, this is what they want us to be. And I do not submit to integrating into British UK culture. Have you been following this account at all?
It's only
Druckpur.
Yes, I've seen it. I have followed it recently. It is rather amusing.
Some of the imagery that you can find on there. But again, this is a Nando's advert. Why is Nando's, everything else has to be folded into the cultural.
It's Portuguese, isn't it, Nando's?
I don't even know. Okay. I don't go there.
Fair enough.
I don't eat Nando's. Goodness gracious me.
You're not eating a Nando's?
I've eaten at a Nando's, but I don't, all right. I don't typically go there very often.
It's quite nice.
It's okay. And it's chicken with spice on it, right?
Yeah, it's nice.
And the funny thing is, if they're going to do in this, they're doing that thing where it's like, oh, white man can't handle his spices,
oh,
right?
The
thing is, I've been to Nando's. I've had the spice as hot as it goes. It's not even that spicy. It's not very spicy.
I was so tempted to go there. Ooh, you're hard.
No, there's way spicy. No, I'm sorry. There's way spicier food out there.
David Brent, like.
I know. I'm not trying to flex because I don't think your tolerance to spice is a great indicator of your value personally. But then again, I'm not from the UK. I'm from England. Two very different places. Anyway, so obviously this was all started by the Rishi Sunak debate, where Fraser Nelson said that Rishi Sunak is England because he was born here.
English
because he was born here. I think he was born in Southampton.
Mm-hmm.
Constantine Kissin disagrees with him. Francis Foster looks on.
As he always does. He's always adding a good addition to
I like to think that Francis has a
lot of things going on in his mind.
A beautiful inner life.
He's debating them both in his mind all the time.
And he's kicking their ass.
Yeah, he's like, he's doing so well.
He's having a great time. And for some reason, I would have thought this would be obvious because it's not even like Rishi Sunak has claimed to be English in the past.
No.
He's very tied to his Indian heritage and he celebrates it. He celebrated Diwali when he was Prime Minister.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with him accepting and celebrating his own heritage. I think people should always be able to do that. And he's not claiming to be English. So why are you saying that he's... Because Fraser Nelson is very, very strange. Very, very liberal on these kinds of questions. Then you got this very, very, as far as I'm concerned, very astroturfed reaction coming from a lot of the liberal part of Twitter. People just saying, oh, it's a fact.
Why is it deep? I don't understand. What's worrying about having a... I don't understand why.
What's worrying about just recognizing that he's not English? Well, it's because of the fact that if people recognize that English is a tied and rooted identity...
Mm-hmm.
Then you will not necessarily be as eager to accept the massive demographic change that's been foisted upon you by your government without your consent and without any sort of democratic vote on the matter. I think that's the worry. It's an act of erasure to make sure that people accept what's changing quietly. And he says that the idea that Rishi Sunak is English is so widely accepted in English society is not even a discussion point for anyone remotely ordinary. The Overton window hasn't shifted, but some online voices on the right have gone so far off the other end, they're now being openly racist. How is it racist to just say, well, he's Indian? That's not an insult, is it?
Well, he practices Hinduism, doesn't he, as well?
Yeah.
So...
it's very, very strange. And to say that
it's not like saying...
I mean, I can make stuff up as well if I just say, everybody in England knows that unicorns exist. It's not even a point that anybody talks about. I can make stuff up too.
But it's not like the argument is whether. It's not saying... it's not disparaging. It's not saying, X, Y, and Z bad. It's saying, this is the fact. And that's what the video was about. It was Fraser Nelson disagreeing with a fact.
Well, yeah, it's like,
and it's kind of like you're not being insulting by saying that. You're just talking about facts.
It's his attempt to shift the definition of something so that it can be more inclusive.
This is liberalism, though, yeah.
and therefore completely meaningless.
Yeah. That's why I don't. I did see the video. I did see the clip of them, and I watched it once, and I went, well, that's a waste of time.
Well, there's Fraser.
Yeah.
Nelson.
Yeah.
There he is again.
And I see some of this discourse, and I'm just sitting there going, and that's all I do.
Yeah, that's
and then
fair.
Carry on.
That's fair. Again, I'm a Spurg, so I have to address these things. You've got lots of people just saying, oh, this is, you're being racist for pointing out that he's not English again. Aaron Bastani saying, well, I had friends who were Iranian, Iraqi, Jamaican, Russian, yada, yada, yada. But if you had an English accent and were born here, you were English. I mean, that's just wrong. Again, if people weren't paying attention to it in your school, then that's just what your school was. It doesn't change the facts. If everybody at your school decided that hydrogen wasn't made of H2O, then that doesn't mean that it's true. Mm-hmm. That just means that you were all wrong. And somebody posted this. I don't think I've ever seen a politician looking more English than this, to be quite honest.
I don't understand what's in the rain.
I think the point is, and I pointed this out yesterday, he is wet, soggy, and sad looking. So if anything, it's a bit of an insult, if you ask me, because the English in particular have been and are a very, very proud people. Now, if he was in a football shirt with a gut bursting out at a footy game, hoisting a pint, possibly I might agree with him saying that Rishi Sunak looks very English here. But just because he's in the rain and looks sad doesn't mean he looks...
I don't understand.
He just looks like a sad politician to me. I'm sitting here going,
what are you talking about? Like, 2,000 likes.
Okay. And again, it's very important to non-English people that he was the first prime minister of Indian descent. He said...
Was that Parveen?
Yeah, this was Parveen Akhtar.
Okay.
Again, and if they want to be celebrating that an Indian man became prime minister of Great Britain, they can celebrate that. But it doesn't. Again, it's a counterpoint to the idea that he is English. He says in a 2015 interview, British Indian is what I tick on the census. We have a category for it. I'm thoroughly British. This is my home and my country. But my religious and cultural heritage is Indian. And my wife is Indian.
Yeah, and that should surely settle the debate by him.
Yeah, he was celebrating Diwali a few years ago. He immediately made a visa deal with India to make sure that lots of Indians could get into the country. That's very, very interesting. He's repeatedly said how proud he is of his Indian roots right before he went to visit India to make sure that lots of Indian visas could be agreed to. And he also says here, for the record, let me declare as a matter of public record, I and my family are of Indian origin. My wife and her family are Indian citizens with financial interests in India. So he doesn't even agree with
Fraser. I don't understand what this... It's all been so pointless.
Well, again, I think it's...
In terms of all of their rhetoric.
It's important to push back on these things. Because I refuse to admit the erasure of my own identity.
Yes.
Because whether or not you want to... this is how I used to think, which was, well, it doesn't really matter.
No,
but the fact of the matter is, it does matter, because even if you individually do not put import on it, other people do and will treat you accordingly. Mm-hmm. So you do have to acknowledge your own heritage and your own identity, if only because the way that other people will relate it to you does affect how you interact with the rest of the world, especially when all of a sudden it comes to the question of reparations, like we've been seeing recently, because surely reparations being that they're making the argument the British Empire did terrible things, therefore the people behind the British Empire have to pay reparations to the people they victimized.
I see where you're going.
Well, if anybody can be English then... Well, I'm sorry to say, Bushra, I'm sorry to say, Sangeeta, I'm sorry to say, Stella Santekidau, you all owe reparations as well, right? Because if it's got nothing to do with ancestry, if it's got nothing to do with the actions of your own forefathers, if anybody can be English, if anybody can be British, as soon as they get here, if they're born here, well, then you're all guilty too. Mm. Because all of a sudden, the identity vanishes when they want to use it for their own advantage. That's the tactical part of it. But as soon as it comes to demanding my money, all of a sudden it's the only thing that matters. So I just find that very interesting. And just to go back to Rishi Sunak as well, he is, I would also describe him as a global citizen, because he has held a US green card before, and there is still the worry in the Tories that he might just move to California at some point, which...
Yes, I heard about that.
Doing.
And he's, him and I believe his wife have, I think, are they part of a company called Infosys, which I believe is an Indian company as well, and it's to do with surveillance.
I think that's what he was addressing in one of the discussions where he was talking about why he owned property and investment money in India.
Right.
As well. It was a trying to explain away some of the questions that people had around those kinds of investments. And the other thing as well is, of course, if English means nothing, then the English, as the country becomes more and more diverse, cannot organize on that identity because it doesn't mean anything. Whereas Keir Starmer is just yesterday meeting British Muslim leaders from across business and civil society today to discuss his plan for change, which will improve the lives of working people across the country. So everybody else can organize to petition the government to get benefits from them, to get privileges from them. We don't exist, so therefore you can't, unless it's time to get the old wallet book out so we can pay for the evil things our ancestors did. The only person I saw responding to this,
yes,
Rupert Lowe, was saying, why not just meet British leaders from across business and civil society? Maybe the farmers,
yeah,
for instance.
Point. Very, very good point.
Maybe the farmers. But oh wait, actually, it turns out the farmers, most of them are English. And because we want to punish them, we don't want to meet with them on that basis. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, there's my take on the discourse going around here. I agree with you that it is stupid.
Yes.
But the means and the goals that they are aiming for by engaging in this kind of discourse are
nefarious,
are very bad. Anyway, so we've got the Rumble rants here. One from Glee 777, $5. Thank you very much. Saying, I have an alarmingly high tolerance to spicy chicken. Am I cooked, bros? I'm afraid that means that you are officially diverse. Do we have any video comments, Samson? Oh, we've got no video comments. All right, then. So we'll just go through the written comments on the website. Someone online says, I think the king should enlist the help of a witch doctor to start pulling the gin out of the knives and putting them in chickens.
Mm.
Why would you want to eat the gin in the chickens, though?
I don't know.
That would be very, very strange. Yeah. Would it mean that they kill themselves? Oh, well. Baron von Warhawk, it doesn't matter what new laws are created or how much funding the police get, the Axelrude Cabana proves that if the police and intelligence services don't do the bare minimum part of their jobs and investigate the suspect, then this will happen again. Because of course he'd been referred to prevent a number of times before.
Yeah.
And then you get people like the man who killed David Amos, who had also been referred to prevent a number of times before he went out and committed that murder.
Yes.
So yeah, there is just a case of political and legal will. Will the police and the institutions do what they're supposed to? If they're not going to, then you won't get any positive results ever. Crime will just keep going on. But of course, you'll still get a knock on the door if you post a spicy tweet. Sophie Liv, just a reminder, there was a time when it was the norm in England for gentlemen to walk around with actual swords on their belts. Yes, that's what I was referring to. I think we need to bring that back. All the English, have some rapiers in those belts again. Make honor duels a thing. Somebody comes at
honor duels, gosh.
Somebody comes at you with a machete, he just agreed to a duel, so you're allowed to take out your sword and accept. It would solve a lot of problems, I'm just saying. I don't think that we can legally advocate specifically for that, but I don't necessarily disagree. And I do wish that we could return to the kind of high-trust society when, yeah, you could just have a sword at your hilt, because that would be awesome, frankly.
I didn't know about that. This is all new to me, that I didn't realize, well, you could walk around with a rapier.
It was only really around the time of the Glorious Revolution in the late 17th century when we started to introduce laws to restrict the carrying of weapons. And even then, as you can imagine, with the Glorious Revolution, it was just against Catholics. We just didn't want Catholics carrying guns about the place.
Right, right.
Whereas in that period, from the mid-12th to the late 17th century, we basically had no legal restrictions on weapons at all. So for a period of, what, like,
didn't know
500 years...
500 years.
Yeah, no 500
restrictions.
Years. And even then, after the very minor restrictions for Catholics that were put in at the end of the 17th century, it took till the late 19th century and then the early 20th century for more and more restrictions to come in. And even at the beginning of the 20th century, it was only restrict sales of pistols to people who are alcoholic or mentally insane.
Right.
It was
very lax for a long time.
It's really only in the post-war period that we had anything near the kind of restriction on weapons that we've had in the country since I've been born. And
because I know that if a female or anyone uses a pepper spray, it's I think you carry the same sentence as you would do if you fired a pistol.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Mm. Pepper spray.
Yeah, pepper spray.
It's very silly.
I know a lot of women who, because they do worry when they go out, especially if they're going out in cities, who are absolutely disgusted by knowing that that law is on the book. Because you know that, I know that basically all of them have looked into whether they could get pepper spray. They've just, you know, Googled, buy pepper spray UK, and it immediately just comes up, we can't. Mm. That's illegal. And they're like, guess I just won't have any way to defend myself then. Mm. Fantastic. Thank you, government. Then Scotty of Swindon. The Romans tried to ban price gouging by mandating prices for bread. Bakers went out of business and people couldn't afford to eat. The US tried to ban alcohol. Gang violence and organized crime skyrocketed and people were still getting drunk. The US tried to ban guns. Gun violence in blue states and cities skyrocketed. The UK tried to ban guns. Knife violence skyrocketed and rivaled the murder rate of New York City. The UK tries to ban knives. This will definitely work this time, guys. It's common sense. Well, it's as I say, the reason I said it's basically gin-brained is that it's the same logic as the banning guns argument. Well, obviously, it's the gun that causes the crime and the violence, right? Mm. Not the person using it.
Never. Okay.
Nicholas Paleobagus says, there's no better example of a government's disregard for their own citizens do not have the right to defend themselves. I agree with you. Furious Dan, England appears to have a plague of cursed swords that spring to life and attack people. It needs some paladins, clearly. Michael Dre Belbis says, sounds like the British police are a bunch of pansies. They won't go after certain factions when they carry weapons, but they will go after your gran for posting memes. Sounds legit. Yeah, that's just Britain. Now, Lars Peter Simonson, just restrict the non-English from owning weapons and reintroduce the death penalty to include non-English who carry any sort of weapon. I think that wouldn't really be able to be possible in the current political climate. The English should have all their rights to keep and bear arms restored. I do agree that, law-abiding citizens should have access to weapons to defend themselves with, because just at the moment we don't have
like any. Like a 2A.
Yeah, we just do not have any means to defend ourselves legitimately. And there have been cases in the past where people have tried to defend themselves as their own homes have been broken into.
Yes, the famous case of farmers being burgled. And I think there was a massive case where someone used a shotgun to defend himself and his wife and kids. And he was put in prison for a long, long time. Yeah, for that, for simply defending himself.
Speaking of knives as well, I think there was a case of an older man having his flat broken into, I think it was probably in London, and he managed to get his kitchen knife and stab the person who was robbing him as he was being attacked, and he got arrested for it. Mm. Fantastic. Would you like to read through your comments?
Yes. Michael Drabelbus, I'm sorry if I...
I think that's right.
Hate to sound like an effing communist, but some billionaires really... Can I say that?
I mean,
can I say that? Was that?
Yeah, that's a bit.
Yeah. Let's move on. Lewis Brackpool going to Blackpool. Very creative. I've heard that one before. The left doesn't care about...
What a dunk.
I know, such a dunk. The left doesn't care about billionaires interfering in politics so long as as they're the right billionaires. People like George Soros, Bill Gates, and organizations like BlackRock can influence politics as much as they like without criticism. But as soon as one of them mentions the mass rape of English girls, all of a sudden their outsized influence becomes a problem. Matthew Hammond, why does Bill Gates get to make policy in the UK when Elon Musk makes a statement about the UK, it is the end of democracy? It's the question that a lot of us are trying to figure out. Where is the consistency? I think a lot of people just want to know where the consistency is.
Are they on my side or not? That's the only...
It's the act. Like, I believe in this certain faction of activism. If you fund me, then you're off the hook. I won't browbeat you. I won't do whatever. You're completely right. Matthew Hammond, why does Bill Gates... Oh, no, I've already read that out. Liverpudlian queer.
Thank you for your support.
Thank you. So it might not just be BlackRock behind Starmer's push to ethnically cleanse the countryside. It sounds like Gates has a strong motive to push for the new inheritance tax policy as well.
That certainly does sound like it to me. I don't know if I'd actually heard about him having met up with the cabinet before they announced the budget that included the inheritance tax.
Who's this? What, BlackRock?
Bill Gates.
Oh, Bill, you didn't know that they were met before?
I don't remember knowing that.
Oh, no. Wow. Yeah, it's insane.
I know that Starmer, like last month or the month before, explicitly just met up with BlackRock and Larry Fink.
Yeah, and then posted it online. And everyone was like,
You can make it a bit less obvious.
I have put a request in for that meeting, that particular meeting with BlackRock, and they've also pushed it back.
Yeah, what a surprise.
So I'm still waiting for that response, which should be, I want to say end of the month, but it could be next month. Who knows? Furious Dan, what a sell. From the toilet to the glass, enjoy tonight the taste of ours.
It's a catchy slogan. I don't know if you can sell much of it, though.
No. AZ Desert Rat, massive eye roll. The process of purifying water for drinking already exists. It's called the water cycle. Omar Awad, I miss the days when blocking out the sun used to be a comic book super villain storyline. Absolutely. AZ Desert Rat. Did these idiots learn nothing from Dubai's cloud seeding experiment? Quit messing with the weather.
I don't actually know about that. I think I've heard of it, but I don't know what happened. Do you?
Yeah, so Dubai have their own cloud seeding program that they've pumped billions and billions of investment.
I assume
because
it never rains there.
So they artificially put, I believe it's silver iodide. It's almost like the science behind it, quote unquote, is to recreate a volcanic eruption. So the after effects of that, because when a volcanic eruption happens, it glistens with sulfate or sulfur and creates this kind of mist over the atmosphere. Incredibly bad for you. Incredibly bad for your health. Never stand near a volcano after it's erupted, or I just don't go near volcanoes full stop anywhere.
Probably fair.
Probably. But when that happens, it creates a coat that not only can dim out the sun in that respect, but with regards to cloud seeding and solo geoengineering, you can create artificial rain. The RAF conducted in 1952 various tests over Lynmouth, which the BBC and lots of others, when they used to actually be okay at their journalism, found out that there was links between the RAF conducting these rain modification experiments and the flash flood in Lynmouth, which killed 35 people in 1952. And in Dubai, there was, I believe it was last year, there were huge floods that were happening in Dubai, and it was very, very, very unheard of. But they found out that this cloud seeding program that the country had invested or put a lot of investment in had been conducting these experiments not too long before, and were warned by other countries. It even happened in Spain very recently, just before the election of Trump.
I'm going to assume that a city like Dubai doesn't have the best infrastructure for dealing with lots of rain.
Lots of rain, yeah. So a lot of people were stuck. I think, I don't quote me on this, but I believe people lost their lives because of it. Even Saudi Arabia was, I believe, conducting similar experiments, and they had massive floodings as well. It happened in Spain last year as well, before the Trump election. Mm-hmm. And there was lots of conducts with artificial rainmaking just beforehand. And you point that out and people go, you're a crackpot. You're a conspiracy theorist. It's the same thing over and over again.
But they actively report it. Here's what we're doing. And
if you repeat the article, you're a conspiracy theorist.
Oh, it's just so frustrating.
Yeah, I know.
Brainwashed people have been to take any sort of report like that, if it's not coming from a trusted source, and assume that you're a crackpot conspiracy theorist.
Indeed. Justin B, if I remember correctly, Bill Gates believes in the 500,000 person limit on the planet, and he fully in, well, I
500,000
I don't people. I'm not sure about that. I know that he has talked, there was a famous TED talk with him that was very controversial, where he spoke about if we do very, I think his quote was, and it's, this is streamlined, if we do very well on public health and vaccines specifically, we could lower the population by X amount. And I was kind of, and sort of people were like, and then the media ran rings and said, no, he didn't mean that. He didn't mean this. He meant.
Why is he doing all of that while at the same time basically trying to like maximize Africa's population? Because it seems very contradictory there, because he's doing all of this stuff to make sure he can save as many lives in Africa as possible through all of these HIV,
malaria, and
malaria, all of this. Well, at the same time, on the other end, he's trying to actively decrease the population of the Earth. That's very.
It's bizarre. Yeah. Obviously, Alex Jones and people like that talk about his potential motives and. You know what he's talked about, and excuse me, it's worrying, and I understand why people are like, this guy needs to be scrutinized, criticized, and we don't want him dictating any policy. So finding out about this FOI request was a big sort of moment where it was kind of like, okay, where do we go from here? Because if we have a foreigner dictating public policy making, essentially, for things such as like the agricultural sector,
and it seems purely for the sake of improving the chances that he can invest in huge amounts of our own farmland,
and BlackRock ready to go with buying up investment and things like that, and you just see it and you go, this is another one within the playbook again and again and again. And if you point it out, oh, you're a crackpot, you're this, you're that, and I'm it sounds like it bothers me. It really doesn't. We all hear it all the time now, and it's so numb.
It's tiring.
It's just tiring, yeah.
It's tiring. You hear that sort of thing from somebody, you go, okay, I'm dealing with an NPC. This person doesn't have an internal monologue, can't rotate an apple in his mind. I'm very disappointed.
Indeed. And Michael, once again, Gates seems oddly nervous when the subject of Epstein comes up. As a reminder, Epstein... indeed did not
kill himself.
Indeed.
And on that point, I think that's a great point to end on. Thank you again for joining us,
thank
Lewis.
You
and just remind everybody where they can find you before we finish.
So you can find me on X at Lewis_Brackpool, not Blackpool. You can find me on Substack, thestateofit.substack.com. you can also find me on Instagram. Shoot me a message, and I always try and get back to people.
There you go. So give Lewis some support, and thank you again for joining us. We'll be back again tomorrow at the pod for the podcast. Samson, did you have something to say? Oh, I just saw you bring the microphone down. I thought you were going to remind me to say something. Is Tomlinson Talks on after this? Yes, we've got a pre-recorded Tomlinson Talks on after this, so if you're subscribed to the website, please make sure to watch that. And with all that said, thank you for watching. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings, you look for deals, you wrote out a budget once a long time ago, you still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.